Hello and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Pig behavior. Today's final episode in the series focuses on technology and the popular Q&A segment. Our expert panel includes animal behaviorist Dr. Simon Turner with PIC specialist Nat Stass, along with Dr. Isaac Huerta and Dr. Justin Hall.
I'm Simon Turner. I'm a senior researcher in animal behavior at Scotland Rural College.
I'm Isaac Huerta. I'm the technical services manager for Western and Southern Europe and Africa.
My name is Justin Hall. I'm a geneticist within PIC. I work in the product development team and in trying to make a better pig.
I'm Nat Stass. I'm a technical service manager within PIC and predominantly on the wean to finish side.
Is it easier to convince management or barn staff of these needs to watch for animal behavior, positive behaviors?
It is not easy. And the main thing is farms have been for a long time, or farming or growing animals has been there for a long story. And the people tend to say the word of, I've been doing that for 40 years. How you want me to change what I'm doing? I mean, what I'm doing, it was what my grandfather was doing. So I laugh about that a little bit, because I consider myself in my mid-year of career, if you want. So I'm not an old person. When you go to a farm and you have a person that is older than you and has been there for a long time, that might be a discussion. So the pig industry has changed. The animals has changed, and we need to change with them. And management also, as you mentioned, it needs to be changed. The problem is, like some farms, it's hard to make them to change because they tell that word. I've been doing that for years. How you want me to tell me what I have to do?
Genetics. You mentioned, Isaac, that the animals have changed, and we've referred to that. But let's talk about how genetics have impacted animal behaviors.
I want to pick up on this, but also go back to a point. You know that's one of my favorite questions to ask farm staffs on these sites that have multiple different genetic lines, is which one is your favorite and why, or which one is your least favorite and why. And I would tell you that, you know, the number one response from the farm staff is that their favorite, or there's least likely their favorite, is due to something that they associate that is different. You know, just due to the behavior. They think, you know, one line is more aggressive. They think another one is more friendly. They think that, you know, some are more curious than others, or some are more flighty than others. So it's a fun conversation to have when you have multiple different genetic lines on the farms, is to bring it up and to talk about it with the staff, because they recognize those differences. They're working with those, you know, day in and day out. And they will tell you that, well, you know, the management is just a little bit different, you know, in terms of these genetic lines. So it's always a fun conversation to have and to get some feedback from those. When it comes to genetics and, you know, the process that we use in terms of year over year genetic improvement, it's one that we want to be balanced. We want to have continual genetic improvement. And, you know, we've really seen over the past few years quite large gains in things like growth rate, which probably means that, you know, we're going to be increasing that growth rate, but that we may have an animal that's going to eat more and have a higher, you know, dietary need in terms of actually achieving that potential for growth. So in those types of challenges, you see that that's kind of the dynamic, or the challenge is, well, if I got an animal that's going to eat more and that's going to, he's going to grow faster, well, how do I deliver the right amount of feed to this animal and the right nutrients and the right balance? You know, I think of the Snickers commercial and of the person becoming, you know, what do they call it? Hangry, you know, they're hungry, and that turns into someone that's angry. And I think that if we're not careful, we can get into that situation. But it's one that, you know, in the world of genetics, I kind of think back to some earlier work that was done at Purdue with a professor there by the name of Bill Muir. He did a selection experiment with poultry with the thought that he would try to do some sort of a family type selection to have an animal that grew fast but had lower mortality. His idea was, let's, you know, select on pens. Let's have a selection program that does both in terms of has an animal that can grow fast but also has low mortality. Well, that was done in the mid-90s. The results of that thought that this was an animal that was better suited for group housing dynamics. It's one that, you know, we saw in different work, people doing selection for docility. That was really done in cattle. They started selecting and having breeding values or EPDs to try to select for animals that were better behaving. But to go back to some of that work at Purdue, well, that's essentially what we're doing today in our progeny testing program within PIC. We're trying to select for animals that have high growth, but also have lower mortality. You know, the things that from a design standpoint we see, we're going to try to continue to make advances in this area. This is also one that there's been a lot of research in terms of that positive behavior that we were talking about earlier. Some will call it what they call a social genetic effects. How can a pig that goes into that pen, he affects his own ability to eat, but he also affects the others, right? Is that, you know, encouraging his neighbor to come eat with him? Is it protecting his neighbor so that the neighbor, you know, isn't, you know, bothered by others? What does that look like? And I know there's been, you know, quite a bit of research, and we continue to do research in this area. We would have done some research in the early 2000s in this area to try to understand, you know, positive behaviors and are they heritable? Is this something that we can select for animals that have more positive behaviors? It's an area that we're actively researching and that we continue to kind of monitor, working with various institutions to better understand it. But definitely the pig is changing. It's a female that has more piglets. Pigs that actually grow faster. They're more feed efficient. They have a higher appetite. So there are some changes. And so, you know, you go back to Isaac's comments about, well, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years. Well, yeah, but the animal's a little bit different. And you gotta treat them a little bit differently, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to follow that up. I mean, that's all good stuff. I mean, I'm going to, I guess, challenge some of the producers listening with, as far as, you know, do you plan ahead, you know, as far as what are our PSY goals or pigs per sow per year goals next year, and make sure our flow supports that, matches that we have enough nursery space, wean to finish space, et cetera, to keep up with that improvement in production at the sow farm level. But then also on the growing pig side, you know, are your barns set up for larger market weights, bigger pigs, et cetera, within those pens to interact with each other and that feeder and that water and that the air quality and your ventilation strategy in there. And then also another challenge on top of that would be, look at your system as a whole and compare your barns that you built 20 and 30 years ago to the barns you're building today. And are they different? Are the specs and the space requirements, et cetera, updated and different? And if they're not, you know, again, feel free to reach out. We have resources and folks on the call that, and within the company beyond this podcast that love to do that stuff. And we have a lot of that information. I mean, one of my biggest joys in what I get to do day to day is when I get to work with producers as far as what's the next barn look like, right? Okay, we have our restrictions in this barn we just built, but let's design where we're going into the future. And that's fun from an exploratory perspective rather than, hey, we already built this, it's standing, now we got to fix it, right? So
can I pick up on you asked a question before there about whether, you know, can we breed or is there a genetic basis to these behaviors? So to try and answer that, there's all of the behaviors that we've looked at so far in pigs show large variation, whether we're talking about tail biting, fighting, whatever it is. There's large variation between pigs. And what we know so far is that there's a genetic basis to all of them that's been looked at. Now, that genetic basis is not necessarily huge. It's smaller than the non-genetic basis. So there's more of the variation is caused by environmental effects than genetic ones. But there is a genetic basis to these. And that's, you know, true of pig production generally. I'm not talking about any particular company. So the challenge, of course, is actually trying to measure these behaviors, because they're a lot harder to measure than something like growth rate. Another issue is we tend to think of them as in silos. You know, we tend to think about tail biting as being bad. We don't want it. But also we don't want belly nosing, and we don't want ear biting. But we do want some of these positive behaviors. And we think of them as silos. And I think that's probably going to limit us. So we've got a project which kind of links in with what Justin was talking about there a little bit, working with PIC. So this project's just been funded recently to look at the genetic basis to overall social competence. So it's looking at not, you know, okay, we don't want tail biting, we don't want this, that, and the other. What is it we actually do want? Well, we want a pig that shows positive behaviors. You know, it does a lot of playing and positive interactions because we think they're beneficial. It also doesn't do tail biting and so on. Let's define what it is that's actually important and see if there's a genetic basis. Can we quantify an overall level of social competence and breed for that kind of pig? You know, and that's the sort of way that's going to get us around problems in the future, like gang aggression, that seems to be becoming more of a problem. You know, if we set out by defining what it is we want rather than what it is we don't want, I think we might make more progress on it.
Yeah. And to I guess, add a little bit to that, Simon, and you know, technology, the way technology is evolving, the uses of things like cameras and live video feeds and those types of things really can take us in the direction to go that route, because that's probably been one of the common feedbacks is, well, how do you capture information like this? To go back to the issue of tail biting, it's not the pig that's getting bitten that I'm so worried about. I'm trying to find the biter. And so having things like cameras, and we're not going to install, you know, one person to watch over the entire pen for 24/7 to try to find that tail biter. But can we use technology to our advantage to help identify these things? That's probably one of the biggest things that will enable us to really move this area.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I've worked with PIC and others for many years, understanding things like the genetic basis to aggressive behavior. And the problem has always been, how on earth do you measure it? And it's even worse for tail biting. But you're absolutely right. And there's a spectacular amount of research going on across the world at the moment in developing camera systems and other sensor type technology to automatically record interactions, social interactions, and also to stitch that together with the identity of the animals that are actually doing it. And once we have that, and you know, within the next few years, we probably will to some degree, that opens the lid on what it is we can actually record and select for, both negatively and positively. Yeah.
Questions for each other. Anything that has been brought up today that you're curious to find out more?
I'll start, and maybe it's a little bit of a loaded question, but for Simon, as far as you mentioned some of those camera technologies and things, and it's just it's so vast, and there's so many companies and researchers looking into that. What's from a production side of things and a commercial side of things, what's a realistic timeline? What's a goal timeline as far as when that can be commercially implemented, or even implemented in a selection program?
I'm no software engineer, so I can only give you my fairly uneducated estimate of that. I think it will depend on exactly what technology you're talking about and who it's designed for, to be honest, Nat. I think, you know, there are barriers in terms of, you know, the cost effectiveness possibly of some of these things, but they may be more cost effective for a breeder than it is for somebody that's not within the high genetic merit end of the breeding spectrum. There are technologies which are out there on the market now. I'm aware of others which are fairly well advanced in the cycle of reaching the market. There are others which are much earlier. I mean, there are a lot of technologies out there in the research literature which will do things like record social interactions. They will track individual pigs and things like this more effectively than you or I could with just looking with their eyes. The challenge is getting them to work in a commercial pig shed. You know, when we apply these technologies on a nice research farm with mm-hmm. overhead cameras and clean pigs and all that, and low stocking densities, they can work. But put them into a pig building where we've got sunlight glaring in at a strange angle and cobwebs and things like this, then it becomes harder. It's going to get there. How quickly it gets there will depend from one technology to another. Another job we have is to understand actually what technologies farmers want. I mean, I think there are technologies yeah. which breeders will find useful. There are technologies which will help people manage pigs better. And my feeling is that we haven't asked farmers enough what it is they actually want. And to a certain degree, have been developing technologies because we think they're cool.
Yep.
Not necessarily because they're going to be applicable on a farm. So, you know, one of my PhD students at the minute is asking farmers, what is it you want? What are you aware of? What do you need technology to help you with? And what are the cost benefit constraints? How much are you able to spend on these things before you're willing to implement them? So it's still got a lot of groundwork, but it's developing really fast.
Yeah. I like that comment because I know some folks that work with John Deere on kind of the development side. And man, 10, 15 years ago when there was a lot of stuff coming out there, all the tractors had the bells and whistles. And now today it's very narrowed down, right? Because they actually figured out what the farmer wants and what he's actually willing to pay for as well. So,
but it may have taken that period of time for the farmer to understand
yep.
what he wanted.
It's a good point too. Yep.
What we hope for or what we are looking for. We have technology available, as Simon said. We need to make sure that technology fits our needs or the farmer needs. Of course, I'm not talking now about cost or those things, but it will happen a day that the technology will be able to create that alarm as now it's doing with the temperature, humidity, gas, anything, any measurement that can be intake by that automatic technology. And it will set up alarms saying like, hey guys, in that particular pen, you have a pig that it's having a problem. And this problem might be the tail biting that we're mentioning right now. Or even before than that, prevention. Simon said prevention is the key or it's the only solution. It's prevention. So trying to do our best. So I was seeing, and I'm sure that Simon can comment a little bit more, but the hanging tail, it's one of the symptoms that we see before a problem is happening. So if that technology, because it will not be somebody waiting in front of the pen looking at that, can tell us that in advance, we might be able to jump in and do actions. So it's a mixture of everything that what we said during the call. No? We need to do the best for them. As far as we know, Justin said, of course, the pigs are changing, are growing more, are being more efficient. So we see changes. They have different needs, different demands. But if technology can help a little bit on that, that would be amazing. I mean, that's what we are looking for.
Yeah, some of my colleagues at SRUC are developing a system like that. The pigs tend to position their tail down. They hang their tail down before you get any clinical signs of tail injury. Mm-hmm. And it seems that it's a pretty good predictor that within a week or two, we're going to have problems within a pen. So they're developing a system at the moment to predict and send a warning message to a farmer that, hey, in pen number 26, in around 1 week's time, they may be tail biting. And it gives a chance to intervene at a relatively low level, just providing a bit of strategic enrichment, not enough to block slurry systems, things like that might nip it in the bud. As you say, Isaac, it's having that technology that's giving an early warning that might help us deal with some of these things.
Would be something, Simon, similar on, for example, in ESF on the gang aggression that I think that Nat mentioned in the past. I mean, I'm trying to do my best on electronic cell feeders that can measure the feed intake per day, the feeding patterns of that particular animal, the position during the day when they go to eat. I'm trying to, with my little knowledge, to set up something that I can detect an animal that will be the one that will receive or will be bullying, will receive bullying, to detect that in advance. And that's a completely different story. It's another example of technology can help us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really need something for the gang aggression. We need to understand what on earth is causing it. It's different to any other kind of aggression. Other types of aggression we can stimulate and predict. We know we cause aggression when we mix pigs into new groups. We know we cause aggression when the feeders are too small. But gang aggression tends to happen between pigs that are familiar with each other. They've been living together for months. They shouldn't be competing. You know, even it can happen in some of the best environments and some of the best farms. And we don't really understand what's causing it. So we need to understand the biology. But exactly as you said, Isaac, we need a way of predicting it as well. Because on the farms that it happens, it can be pretty devastating. So we need a way of being able to have an early warning that this might happen in a particular pen, and we need to watch it more closely.
So at what time I was told that my job as a geneticist was to try to develop a sow that could call me up on a cell phone and tell me how she was doing, tell me how many pigs she had, that she could tell me when, you know, if she was done farrowing and all those things. And although we're talking about technology, it feels like it's the exact opposite. We need technology that can tell us when she's done, how she's doing, as well as, you know, the management and barn staff to really be able to key in on those signals of how things are going. But I guess, you know, I can always dream and try to make that sow that can use a smartphone. So work is never done, right?
Many thanks to Dr. Simon Turner and PIC's Nat Stass, Dr. Justin Hall, and many thanks to Dr. Simon Turner and PIC's Nat Stass, many thanks to Dr. Simon Turner and PIC's Nat Stass, Dr. Justin Hall, and Dr. Isaac Huerta for sharing their insights on this important topic. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a longtime listener, take a second to subscribe to The Squeal. It's the easiest way to stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes. Just search for The Squeal wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, visit your phone settings and turn notifications on so you never miss an episode. For PIC, international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.